Welcome to Hope Is Here. My name is Greg Horn, and I am talking with Alex Elswick today. He is the founder of a new ministry in Central Kentucky called Voices of Hope. So, Alex, thanks for being with us today, man.
Thanks for having me, Greg. I appreciate it.
Well, obviously, I like the name of your organization, Voices of Hope, since this is called Hope Is Here. But tell our listeners a little bit, what is actually Voices of Hope?
Yeah, I must be in the right place with an organization called Voices of Hope. We're a nonprofit organization in Lexington. We primarily serve the Central Kentucky community, and we help people sustain long-term recovery from addiction. We do that through, you know, a variety of services, but our focus, I tell a lot of people, like, we don't do addiction. That's not what we do. We don't focus on drug use, on the consequences of people's past. That's not our business. We're focused on recovery and the hope that lives in recovery.
Well, tell me, why do you have such a personal interest in something? Why did you start Voices of Hope?
Yeah, so I'm a person in long-term recovery from a heroin addiction, and started with a prescription to pain pills when I was 18 years old and had wisdom teeth removed, and kind of the stereotypical story you're hearing time and time and again in the news, progressed to heroin, and I ended up homeless and sleeping under a bridge and the whole deal. And I was really fortunate to have access to the resources that I needed to recover and to get my life back in order. And I look around and just see that a lot of folks don't have those opportunities. And so our organization and the incredible people we work with are dedicated to providing those opportunities for other people.
Well, it's obviously something that unfortunately is having a toll here, even in Central Kentucky. We see it on a national level. And yet, you know, I think a lot of people go through recovery, but it's after you leave the recovery treatment center, that's when the real war begins. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. It really speaks to the focus of Voices of Hope, because I think there's a myth, a misunderstanding about addiction that a lot of people think, like some other disease, you can just go to the hospital and be treated and you're cured. But addiction's a chronic disease. So when you think about hypertension or asthma or diabetes, like any other chronic disease, you have to treat it and manage it every single day. And that was one of the big realizations for me. And thus, that's what we do with our organization, is help people manage their disease on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, people, there's so many support groups and things. And I actually have a couple guys living with me that are been recovered and been sober for a while. But yet, I mean, it's sometimes a minute by hour daily deal, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's there are all those cliches that people kind of roll their eyes at, especially when you first get to treatment. You don't want to hear all that. But one day at a time, there's something powerfully, powerfully true about that statement. It's just all we've got's today. And my primary goal every day is getting my head to the pillow sober. And if I get there, then, you know, I wake up with hope that tomorrow is going to be a good day.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you know, nobody decides they're going to be an addict.
Right.
I mean, you know, you didn't, you know, just wake up one day and say, hey, think right. I'll be an addict.
Right.
And, you know, yet for people that have not suffered with addiction, unfortunately, I don't know hardly anybody that's not been affected by it,
right,
by a loved one, a coworker, a friend. But at the same time, just talk about how you know, Satan's the great deceiver, how it just all of a sudden you get on a slippery slope. I mean, it never is intentional. It just doesn't happen overnight. Can you kind of maybe help explain that to maybe somebody that's like, man, I just don't understand how that happens?
Sure. So I can tell you from the beginning that I come from a really happy, healthy home. And I was never neglected. I was never abused. My parents didn't divorce. I could scarcely name a single bad thing that happened to me as a kid. But with that being said, there are two really important things about who I was from the day that I was born that contributed to my addiction. And the first is that I have the genetic predisposition. There's a lot of addiction in my extended family. So my mom's got seven uncles, and four of them had drug and alcohol problems. So research tells us really clearly that meant from that very moment, I was more likely than the average person to have a problem. And two, from the time that I was young, I struggled with anxiety. And I've been diagnosed with a few different anxiety disorders throughout my life. And the research also speaks very clearly to the fact that people who deal with anxiety and depression and all sorts of co-occurring mental illness are more likely to have a problem. So I think for me, I spent a lot of my life looking for ways to cope with how I felt. And, you know, that could be anything from food to pornography to I found drugs at 15 years old. And then I think the reality is I never would have been exposed to really hard drugs had it not been for being prescribed an opioid. And And, you know, I never intended to abuse opioids. All I know is that prescription ran out after about 3 weeks, which I never should have had 3 weeks worth of opioids for, you know, having wisdom teeth removed. And prescription ran out and I felt really sick. And even though it wasn't really on a conscious level, it was like on a cellular level, I knew if I could get some more of those pills, I'd feel okay. And that's really where it started for me.
Wow. And the fact of the matter is, it's not that hard to get the pills, is it?
No, not at all. It's not hard to get the pills by legitimate means through a doctor because, you know, as I'm sure you've read some articles, they've been totally overprescribed. But it's really not hard to find them on the street either. Once you work your way in there, it's plenty accessible.
When did you get to the point where you realized, you know, man, I think I've got a problem? To tell us about that moment.
Yeah, my addiction developed pretty gradually, but the way that it felt to me felt like I woke up 2 years later with a $150 a day pain pill habit. And I was a college student. I didn't have a job. So you can't support a $150 a day habit without doing some really messed up things, you know? And I've done some really messed up things in my life. And I think in large part because of some of those things and because of the shame, I finally came to my parents and said, Mom, Dad, I'm doing these things that are wildly inconsistent with my character. This is not who I am, you know. I need help. And that was the first step.
Well, I want to commend you on that. We were talking before we went on the air, and we both lost a friend, a pastor, mm-hmm. Jim Howard, who grew up in Lexington, and I believe a Lafayette High School graduate, if I'm not mistaken, and unfortunately took his own life. And, you know, one of the things that I heard Rusty George, their lead pastor, who was the founder of 608 Service at Southland Christian, that now is just at 6 p.m., but started that over 15 years ago. I listened online yesterday afternoon as they talked about the situation. And one of the things he just wanted to say to people is, if you're hurting, no matter what you've done, I know you think, no, I can't be forgiven, you know, there's not any help for me. Man, I just want to commend you and thank you that you did say, hey, I've messed up big time. And, you know, that took a lot of courage to do that, man.
It did. And I think more than any, it did, but it took a lot of pain more than anything else. It took a lot of hurt and a lot of sort of thinking that there was no other option for me. And like I said, that was the first step. I wish that all it took was a cry for help and that was the end. But
what happened next after that?
Yeah, so that was the first step to a long, long journey of going through multiple episodes of treatment. So I went to rehab something like 4 or 5 times, went to outpatient treatment, went to therapists, the whole thing. And it just seemed like I would do really well in treatment. And then when time came to transition out, I'd be out a week or two and I'd relapse. And I didn't understand why. And what was difficult about it is the whole time people were telling me, like, if you really want to stop, you'll just stop, you know? Mm. Like, if you really want to stop, you'll stop. And I'm here to tell you, Greg, I wanted to make it stop, and I couldn't make it stop. And eventually I ended up, you know, through a long series of events, homeless in a few different cities, and I spent the last days of my addiction sleeping under a bridge in Dayton, Ohio, just a stereotype of addiction. And was fortunate to walk into a homeless shelter there in Dayton that has a treatment component, a Salvation Army, and that's kind of where my recovery journey really began.
And when was that? What year was that?
That was September 13th of 2013.
You remember that date?
Absolutely. It's an important day for me.
Absolutely, man. Well, I love it. If you just tuned in, we're talking with Alex Elswick, and he is one of the founders of Voices of Hope. It is a ministry organization, nonprofit, that's based here in Lexington, Kentucky. And as you can tell from listening, man, what a powerful story. So September 13th, 2013, mm-hmm. you're there at that Salvation Army and you started that process. So talk to us a little bit about that, just for people that, you know, maybe have heard about this from the outside, but, you know, straight from going through that. Tell us about that process.
Sure. I can tell you the first 30 days maybe I spent at the Salvation Army, hands down the worst 30 days of my entire life. Most miserable long days of my entire life, because I think what a lot of folks can't appreciate is it's easier being under a bridge and it's easier being in seedy hotels than it is being in treatment, because at least when you're under a bridge, you can get your hands on your medicine, you know what I'm saying? And you can have just a temporary reprieve from the way that you feel. But when you get into treatment, especially early in recovery, you're just so miserable. And
Is that part of the detoxing process? Is that
the
part
first,
of it?
The first couple, maybe first week, is the physical detox part. But what follows is there's a neurochemical reality happening here where, because your brain's become habituated to needing heroin to function normally, when it doesn't have it, you experience what's called anhedonia, which is a fancy way of saying you can't experience pleasure. So little things that help get most of us through the day, having coffee, smoking a cigarette, having a good discussion with a friend, whatever it is that helps people connect and get through the day, those things aren't being reinforced in your brain early on. So you're just miserable. I mean, you just exist for a while. And I'm grateful that slowly things started to change and my brain started to heal. And I woke up at the Salvation Army about 90 days in and felt okay. And didn't feel good, you know, but just felt okay.
But it took almost 90 days.
Took about 90 days just to have the clarity to go, I think I'm okay right now. And I ended up spending 6 months at the Salvation Army. And again, you know, that's a long time to spend at a homeless shelter, to spend in treatment, to put the rest of your life on pause. And yet it's still not over, because the day that I got out of the Salvation Army, I had a criminal record. I had lots of debt. I had bad credit. I had all these barriers. Nobody was going to give me a job. Nobody was going to give me a place to stay, you know, on and on. And people showed up for me. I mean, people showed up for me in ways that maybe I didn't deserve, and in ways that carried me through some hard times.
Give us an example.
There's a pastor at the old Crossroads Christian Church out Todd's Road named Glenn Schneiders. And Glenn was a family friend. He'd been my parents' pastor for a long time. And Glenn let me stay at the parsonage there on the church property for free in exchange for doing some property. I lived in the basement there. And it was because I had a place to lay my head at night that I had the flexibility to go look for a job. And then somebody gave me a job working in a tobacco field, despite my criminal record. And it was because I had a job that I was able to get health insurance, because I had health insurance that I was able to get to see a therapist to address anxiety. So it's just like one thing after another. People just showed up when I needed them to, you know?
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I know there's people listening saying, hey, I want to be on the solution side. And I guess one of the challenges, and I'm almost afraid to ask you this because we only got about a minute left, so I'm going to save this. So tomorrow, the question I want us to start off with, Alex, is, you know, what is the difference between helping somebody and enabling them? So we're definitely going to talk about that, but we've only got about a minute left today's program. If you just tuned in, if you missed this, you need to go to our website, hopeishere.today. Hope is here. Today, I've been talking with Alex Elswick. He is one of the founders of a new ministry organization here in Central Kentucky called Voices of Hope. And what is the website for that?
It's www.voicesofhopelex.org.
All right, give us that one more time.
www.voicesofhopelex.org.
And you need to check that out, because what they want to do, they're not an in-house treatment center, but they're helping people once they get out, and that's when the real recovery starts. And it's just been powerful today. I know I've been blessed, I've been encouraged, I've been challenged, and I know nobody that's not been affected by addiction. And we just see people that lose hope, and that's why we do Hope is Here. And I love the name of their organization, Voices of Hope. So check out their website, but also tune in tomorrow, because I'm going to have Alex share with us, you know, what is that fine line between helping and enabling? And I know for a lot of us as followers of Jesus, man, that is such a fine line that we struggle with. So I'm Greg Horn. Tune in tomorrow when Alex Elswick stays with us and we continue our conversation about Voices of Hope.
The signs of an aging parent can be overwhelming, but at Home Instead Senior Care, we understand the struggle of caring for an aging loved one. What was once simple, like making a cup of hot tea or getting the mail, isn't so simple for them anymore. It's why we offer everything from individualized help around the house to advanced Alzheimer's care to keep them safe and sound at home instead of anywhere else. Take the first step and call us anytime at 859-273-0085 or visit us at homeinstead.com/312. Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal.